Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, flagship RIP number 23. I have this labeled as 23 on YouTube, so I'm hoping it's 23. My name is Joey, here with my co-host Len. How you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
I'm great, Joey. It's good to be on the show once again. Yeah, everything's good over here. Just kind of winding things down for the end of summer, unfortunately. I'm not looking forward to transitioning to the winter. But nonetheless, here we are. How are things over there with you?
No complaints, buddy. Had a great workout today, so I feel good about that. And we'll continue to have great workouts until, you know, Dougie closes the weight rooms again in the name of my health and everyone else's health. So otherwise, things are just rolling right along.
Joey, I needed your help. I actually had to bring a treadmill down to my basement. It was just an absolute beast. 285-pound treadmill, or 275-pound. Yeah, it was not fun, but it was done. And I had to replace an old treadmill that just kicked the bucket, unfortunately. And just whatever. It is what it is. And here we are. What's the price of Bitcoin in U.S. dollars, Joey?
In the greenback, it is $47,875.67. How about in Canuck bucks?
$60K and $290. And I remember being there, that same number in the US dollar side of the equation. I wish we could get there again, but hopefully very soon. Let's see if we can get a show pump on this one and drive this one up maybe to 61,000, 62,000 Canadian. And Joey, are you ready for a fantastic show ahead of us? I have a lot to talk about today, including a lot of new Canadian stuff. I got, I'm going to blow your socks off, hopefully, but let me know when you're ready to go.
That A block looks great. I have to be honest with you. I woke up this morning still in a bit of a daze from my week at the cottage and our weekend at the cottage. And I'm just like now, I think, hitting normal stride pacing. So I'm ready to, ready to dive in. Let's hit it.
Let's do it. All right. So the first story I'm going to be talking about will be quantitative easing in the United States of America. And Jerome Powell, he was talking this past week, and he has indicated that the quantitative easing, which is keeping the U.S. economy afloat, this will continue for some time, unfortunately. The timeline that he originally had in place has now been muddied as COVID is getting harder to predict as they're working their way down the Greek alphabet. And currently we're at the Delta variant. And just for heads up for everybody out there, there's 24 letters in the Greek alphabet. So we have a long way to go before we exhaust the Greek alphabet and move on to the next one. But nonetheless, and Jay Powell was actually, he was hopeful for reducing the QE later this year, but the plans may be temporary shelved. And he was talking about durable good prices. And these prices, for the goods, this is a quote unquote for what he's saying, the annual inflation rate is well below zero over the past quarter century. This is for durable goods. I don't know what the heck he's spinning here, but he's making stuff up because nothing has been below zero in the past quarter century. And as for interest rates, the rate hikes, it's not imminent. It's not going to happen in the near future, probably not even in the medium future, maybe in a long distance, in a far, far, far land, far, far away, but not in the next little while, unfortunately, here. And he's kind of waiting for the economy to hit full employment. And he's admitting that we're still some way away from actually getting to that metric. Currently, the U.S. unemployment numbers are 5.4% from July 2021. This is down quite a bit from the April 2020 high of 14.8%, but still, we are not near the February 2020 mark of 3.5%. So we're about, the U.S. actually is about 2% off from just before COVID hit. So there's still some things to be done to get the employment fully going. And there's the stimulus checks. This is, you know, the primary reason why people probably are not working. Like they've already issued three different stimulus checks. There's a fourth that they're talking about. There's still some back and forth to see if it's going to be done. But if it is, well, here you go. It's going to be another one that's going to be issued to people. And what are they going to do with it? Well, A survey conducted by CNBC and Momenta found that 11% of the 5,500 interviewees between ages 18 and 34 purchased cryptocurrency with the money they received in stimulus checks. And further, 60% of those who took part in the survey stated that they think digital assets as a long-term investment. Most of those who have invested their stimulus check in Bitcoin have made a profit already. According to Bitcoin Stimulus, this is a fantastic website, www.bitcoinstimulus.net. Everybody should check it out. Anybody who's invested their $1,200 stimulus check in Bitcoin from back in April 2020, they now have $8,700 worth of Bitcoin. So that there's the reason why you have inflation is people, they're printing the money, stimulus checks are going out, it's going and it's going into at least 11% of the people are putting it into Bitcoin, which is a good thing. And one of the driving factors of this QE, we have low interest rates and bond purchases. This is at the tune of bond purchasing of $120 billion with a B per month minimum of bond purchasing. That is a lot of bonds being purchased on a monthly basis. And Jerome Powell was actually saying inflation is solely around the Fed's 2% target rate. This guy, I don't know what the hell he's reading or what numbers he's being fed to him, but it is totally wrong. He's giving us information that is not right. Read between the lines, do your own research. Some more information. The U.S. balance sheet right now sits at $8.4 trillion, or it's double where it was in March 2020, some 17 months ago. If you think this number is going to be stabilized or going down in not too distant future, well, QE is not disappearing. They're going to be doing this for some time. And what happens because of that? Well, their balance sheet keeps growing and growing and growing. From $8.4 trillion, it's going to be $10 trillion and beyond, Joey. It's going to be pathetic.
How far down the Greek alphabet is like the mix and match of letters that would have to spell, like you'd need to spell Jackson Hole? Are we going to get that variant, you think, or no?
I don't know. And you know, the one thing I'd love to know is if they ever do exhaust this, what is the next alphabet they're going to be going to? I'd love to know. Oh my God. I don't want to go there, but
after this, we're going through the original 151 Pokemon. Everyone knows that. That's the next logical step. Let's talk about these things. Okay. You mentioned a few things here and I just added a couple of things to my notes. Cause you know, like always, you've added late commentary that I did not see today when I was reviewing the story. So good for you. It's quality stuff as always. Let's start with this idea that Powell says the annual inflation rate has been well below zero over the past quarter century. Do you know how he's able to make this, declaration? Do you know what he's leaning on?
I'm guessing he's talking about stuff like phones and whatever, because the price or anything, they kind of go down over time as innovation progresses. Is that what kind of where he's going out with? Because I have no clue. It seems totally asinine that he would bring this up, that it's below zero. It doesn't make sense to me.
He's sort of leaning on that. As we know, the prices of phones go up every year. My first phone, Motorola Razr, probably costs $300. The next iPhone is going to be twice a mortgage payment for me or around that. So the reason he's able to do this is because he's using what's typically referred to as a hedonic adjustment. And that's not an endearing term. It's something that people use to describe this sort of bullshit insanity that he's spitting out. The idea is that the quality of good, even as the price has gone up, the quality has gone up even more quickly. And so, for example, a television that you would have spent $3,000 on a year ago or 10 years ago, you know, that DLP rear projection that only works if it's pitch black and for 3 years, those TVs now at $3,000 are incredible pieces of hardware, built-in sound systems, built-in HDMI ports, the firepower in there, the energy efficiency, blah, 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 the list goes on, online connectivity and all this stuff. So these adjustments are a way to sort of twist the numbers. Now, people who are in this inflation game as deep as you and I will remember before it was scrubbed from the internet, God only knows why, the Chapwood Index, where it was a city by city, or I think maybe if not city, then definitely like United States regions, a region by region index of inflation. Now you can still get this in like basic text on the internet, but it cuts off in the back end of 2019. I'll leave it to you to, you know, speculate on why. You can get your tinfoil out there, buy tinfoil stocks after this podcast. So the Chapwood Index used to say that the inflation rate was running in the back, they split into two half years. So the first half of 2019, I don't remember what the number was, but the second half of 2019, before COVID, they had the inflation rate running at 12% in New York City, which is like face melting when it comes to how hot that is. Okay. So that's one thing. Powell also said in his Jackson Hole, you know, address, quote unquote, I think it's just a speech, right? He just writes it and they release it, that even if they do taper bond purchases, which, you know, remains to be seen, been a lot of talk about tapering for the last little while. Everyone remembers the taper tantrum from 2017 or 18. I forget what year that was, where he even said the word tapering and stocks took a dive that afternoon. Even if there is a taper, there's no guarantee that the rates are going to rise alongside, which is hilarious. Like the bond thing is so far gone now. The market mechanisms are so perverted, which we'll talk about in a bit. But this idea that rates going to go up, which again, on this show, if you've been listening to this show, you know that the key thing is whether or not this guy has the testicular fortitude to say that the rates are going to go up. I doubt it very much. And I doubt any politician has that fortitude either. But it's not, you know, to say that they won't do it. I just think it's not coming anytime soon. The historical data that, you know, well, let's start with this, okay? The interest rates are tied to a vehicle called the 10-year Treasury bond. That's what people talk about when they're talking about the interest rate in the United States. It's a vehicle that moves typically with risk appetite. So as a bond decreases in the interest rate, there's more demand for risk assets and vice versa because no one wants to park their money there, right? And so when the bond goes up in value, people are more willing to put their money into the bond market. And so what you see is a stock decline or a little bit of steam coming off the top, a blow off top in the stock market, whatever, right? Pick your technical pattern or your favorite media analyst phrasing for that type of event. The problem is that there's a lot of historical data now that shows what kind of problem the Federal Reserve is going to have in very short order. The problem is that in order to facilitate a risk-on environment, which is to say that like people are going to be buying equities, other durable goods like homes, and just generally spending money and not saving it, in order to facilitate that kind of market, the rates need to drop even more in order to facilitate more asset purchases, right? So they can't raise rates and still keep the economy going. That's a problem. Now, here's the real kicker. In 1987, when there was a huge, you know, everyone remembers Black Monday in 1987, remembers. I mean, I was born that year. But like everyone knows about Black Monday in 1987. Huge stock market drop, absolute obliteration all over the place, right? Tape was just reading red all the way across every major index, every, you know, first world index, you name it. That in the 1987 peak, peak to trough, we saw about 15% on the 10-year drop to about 10%. So that's about a 35% drop. In 2008, the 10-year went from 4.5 to 2%, which is about a 50% drop. 50%, okay, during the housing crisis. Now, those are big drops. In a market where the drops are significant, people, the intention is to stimulate a recovery by taking people out of bonds and into equities, taking people out of saving and into lending and loans, right? And so those vehicles are supposed to work that way. The problem right now is that the rate is about 1.3%. So this is to say that if the U.S. government print of inflation is around 5%, you know, who knows if it's actually 5%. That's what they say, right? I think we talked about that last week. If the rate's actually 5%, you're out about 4% on every dollar you invest in the 10-year treasury because the rate is about 1 and change. The inflation is about 5. And so you're losing 4%. That's what's called the real rate of the real risk rate on bonds. So it's unsustainable at that level. The problem they're also having is that it's accelerating. The printing is going to continue. There's $3.5 trillion coming down, which will be $4 trillion by the time that stimulus bill is passed, the economic infrastructure stimulus. And so what you're going to see is that number on the inflation side accelerate. Then you also consider that if they had to stimulate the economy, if they had to get you out of bonds and into equities, how the fuck are they going to do it? Who the fuck is in bonds at 1%? No one. They can't drop the rate any lower. You're already losing tons of money by not being in equities. There's nobody I know, nobody under 60 years old who is in the like maximum like Roman soldier phalanx defensive posturing in their portfolio. These people, okay, are the only people left in bonds. And even they are starting to look at Apple, Microsoft, dividend paying FAMAG stocks that are just doing too well to ignore anymore, even at 60 years old. Okay, so they have no vehicle to push people out of bonds back into risk markets, equities, durable goods, consumer spending. They don't have a vehicle for that. That's a big problem. To understand, okay, just to paint you more details here, how much froth is in the equities market right now, we're going to look at something called the Buffett Indicator. Okay, this is the measure of US GDP compared to the S&P 500 market cap. In 2008-09, when there was admittedly a fairly large crisis, the housing crisis and debt-backed securities and the mortgage derivatives and all that stuff, it was all garbage, right? All paper money, house of cards, got windy. And of course, what do you think happened? The thing came tumbling down. In the valley of that downturn, somewhere in 2009, the Buffett indicator was 53%. That's to say that US GDP was 53% of the, or sorry, S&P 500 market cap was 53% of US GDP. So pretty good, pretty good. That's not the best, but it's also not bad. In 2020's valley, where the entire world was shut down, people were scared to go outside. Everyone thought that everybody was dying from the beer flu and many other things along the way, including stimulus money and all this other shit that happened. Ridiculous response. And I think it's ongoing, this sort of, I'm just going to stop. The response shouldn't have been what it was, and it should have stopped by now. But that aside, the trough during the low was 120%. So the S&P 500 was worth 120% of American GDP. Now here's the best part, okay? In the face of Delta, in the face of more stimulus, in the face of emergencies, in the face of Afghanistan, in the face of whatever, the number right now is 203%. This thing is running away at a speed you cannot believe. Now, what you have to ask yourself is the economy really that strong? Or is the money just losing value at an accelerating pace? To me, the answer is obvious. I'm looking at storefronts. I just drove through downtown Hamilton about half an hour ago, and there's hiring signs all over the place. If I go on Instagram, I see people talking about their restaurants hiring, their construction companies hiring, their you name it. People don't want to work, and they're not producing anything. That's a big, big problem. The other thing to consider is that since March 2020, and this is just me eyeballing the Buffett indicator chart, you can look this up too. It's not that hard to tell what I'm about to say, but not that hard to fact check this. The line from March 2020 in the Buffett indicator is straight up. It's straight up. It's like almost 80 degrees up and to the right. I think this is like, it is so dicey right now for Powell to say anything. We talked about this before. This guy cannot say for certain that they're going to taper. He can't say for certain they're going to raise rates. He can't do any of that stuff for certain, because unlike in years past, unlike in crises that have passed, he doesn't have the ammunition in the tank to push people out of bonds. So we talked about like the implications of that, something like negative rates, right? In savings accounts, you're not even going to be able to keep money in the bank. And it's already happening in some European countries, but like in practical terms, for people who are in like high interest savings or bonds or whatever, like GICs in Canada, you're losing money. Like it's a loss 100% of the time. And it's an accelerating loss these days in the face of giant run-ups in FanMag and the S&P and the Qs and home prices and fucking used cars even. Like you could have bought a pickup truck and made more money than you did in a 10-year. It's insane. I think, Len, that this is like, I don't know if this is a top indicator, but for sure, if you're looking at the bingo card for tops, this is like, you're checking a box here. And I think people really got to start being careful about where they're putting their money, because this thing, it can't go like this forever. That's for sure. So you have to ask yourself, is it going to go like this forever? And your money's just going to be devalued to nothing. Like the Hungarian forint when I went over there, a pair of shoes, 200,000 forints. It's like, okay, sure. Or is there going to be a taper and a pullback in the stock market? I think, to me, Len, it's much more likely they let this thing just run until they can't anymore and then they come up with some new system. I know that's, there's the whole reset thing floating around on social media. I don't know anything about that. I don't care. But I think, to me, not having money in Bitcoin when all this stuff is going on is bonkers. It is bonkers.
Joey, one thing I would suggest, if you're correct, if this is going to go on forever, this is the closest that you're going to get to financial advice, but it's not financial advice. It's invest in whoever's providing the ink, whatever company is doing the ink for the ink for that money printer, because they are going to make a killing through this whole ordeal. So find out who that company is, invest in them. That's the good place to park your money, or Bitcoin, one or the other.
What about but the CBDC is going to take ink manufacturers out of business?
That's true. But until that happens, that company still has the contracts to provide ink to the money printer. So they're still golden in my books. But in all due reality, in all due seriousness, like Jerome Powell, he was and still is in a no-win situation. I feel really sorry for this guy, because what can he do? He has, as you said, he's got very little ammunition left to actually use to do anything. And he has to go out there and basically talk to the camera, spewing crap that he knows is not true, to try to make people, the confidence in the economy grow. So I kind of feel really bad. Actually, I do feel really bad for this guy, because he's not stupid. He's just in a no-win situation. Unfortunately, when it's all said and done, he's going to be looked at like one of the worst chairmen for the Federal Reserve. But, you know, is it partly due to his ineptness, or just, you know, the cards given to him? I don't know. That's just my two cents. What do you think about him? Is he a joker, or is there any value to him? I don't know.
I think he's the product of, I'm going to choose my words carefully here. So what I've more broadly been saying in my friend group is that we have just a number of peacetime institutions, whether it's the Federal Reserve, central bank, federal government, governments at the state, local, provincial, municipal, whatever level. These are peacetime governments, and what they're interested in is maintaining status quo. And there's not like, I don't mean that like ideologically, like I don't mean we want to continue to see the middle class struggle or keep people poor. Like I genuinely don't believe that some of these people want that. Maybe some do, but I don't believe everyone does. I think what I'm trying to get at by the peacetime thing is that they're not equipped to handle the heat in the kitchen at this level, so to speak. You know, we saw what happened with, you know, the fiscal response from COVID, and we've seen what's happening with, you know, sort of these just continued, like, you know, in the face of a lot of mounting evidence to the contrary. I won't go into COVID here, but like even on the side of like inequality, you know, like for Powell to get up there and say that like he doesn't know if the Fed is contributing to inequality, like you do know. You've never had to consider saying something like that on such a public stage, because no other Federal, you know, Reserve chairman has tripled the money supply in 18 months. Like there's no playbook for this for him. And so there is a playbook for peacetime policymaking and peacetime policy communications. But man, these guys are in a different world now. Okay. And you know how you know they're in a different world? If you look on Twitter, Zero Hedge once in a while will put up a really solid, like a retweet of like a Chinese media or government like person, and these guys are just taking pot shots. It looks like the malice at the palace. Like the fans are throwing Coke bottles at the players, and they just don't give a fuck, man. And so like I think that a lot of these American and just generally first world policymakers, you know, through no fault of their own, they're just not equipped for this. There's no playbook for this. And so whether it's, you know, on the health front or on the fiscal monetary front, what is he supposed to do? Like I feel bad for the guy too, but he's not doing himself any favors, because, you know, unlike in 08, you know, in 08 land, I couldn't take to Twitter or check out a podcast to have somebody tell me why the stuff Obama was spewing out was just total bullshit, right? But now the vehicles are there for me to find that stuff out. And so I feel for the guy on one side, but also, like, you know, much like the financial institutions he is, you know, basically employed to protect, they haven't evolved, and it shows that they just haven't thought about these sort of crisis calm situations, and they're losing steam. And like you mentioned, there's a lot of people losing faith in this. This is, you know, fourth turning level stuff here. Pretty serious.
We don't need somebody that's good for peace like Tom Hagen. We need somebody else. And that's my Godfather reference of this episode.
I don't even know who that is. This Godfather character?
Yes, he was. So anyways, next story I have is about Ethereum. And I'm going to be brief on this one, because I'm not an Ethereum guy. I don't know too much about it, but something is happening with Ethereum, and I just want to bring it to the attention of the listeners and viewers. And right now there's a potential split going on with Ethereum. And this is a result of Ethereum nodes. Apparently there's a lot of them that are not signaling that they're going to move forward with a hotfix to correct a bug. And the developers are trying to get everybody on board, including all the node operators, to implement the recent release of a fix to resolve a security vulnerability in the code. And if you want to know more about what this fix will rectify, well, the developers of Ethereum, they're being tight-lipped at this moment. And Ethereum developers are out there, they're doing everything they can to get all node operators on board. They're on the top of the hills using smoke signals. They're doing anything possible to get them on board. But unfortunately, not everybody is jumping on. So Ethereum developer, actually, he was actually saying, until the bug is resolved, and quote unquote, he says, stay away from doing transactions for a while. That is telling. When the Ethereum developer is saying, stay away from doing transactions, that tells me something. And now that this exploit is in the wild, it could also be used on other networks like Polygon. We heard about them. They were hacked recently, right?
Polybingon now, I'm pretty sure. Right?
Good one. The BSC, etc. So this vulnerability, it exists not just for Ethereum, but also other networks. Just keep that in mind. And in my opinion, the issue at hand is the code is getting more and more difficult as it's trying to do too much. It's just a one-size-fits-all approach. It works. They're trying to make it work in their world. The way Bitcoin operates, which is totally different, it's a layered approach and it's much more simplified and things can be built on top of it like modules. It's much more simpler to manage. And if you do any sort of change to any layer whatsoever, the other layers aren't impacted. Ethereum doesn't have that same type of robustness to their network. Everything is kind of built in together. And as things get more complicated, well, these things are going to be coming out. And one thing I want to know, Joey, the new fork name, is it going to be Ethereum Vitalik's Vision? That's what I'd love to know if that's the case. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this Ethereum split?
I think this is hilarious. I honestly do. I try not to look at any eth stuff because I just don't care. And I'm very vocal on the show and on Twitter and, you know, probably other places too, where I don't care about this. This is a Play Stupid Games event. Okay. I cannot imagine having any significant amount of money parked in this network. Okay. Cause there's a vulnerability, an outright hack or rug pull issue with fees, something it's all the time. Okay. So looking through some of these stories about the chain split and the hotfix and all this other garbage on Geth, I was looking at these EIP 1559. I'm pretty sure I have it in the notes there. Yeah, EIP 1559. Whatever. This like new code deployed on top of the chain that was, you know, paraded around prior to its deployment for its potential to lower fees to some, you know, incredibly low, minuscule level world computer, cheap money that, you know, Vitalik famously said that money shouldn't cost $5 to move or something like that. You know, you know what the fee was, Len, on Sunday night at 8 p.m.? Like the Sunday night at 8 p.m. is low traffic time. Okay. Low traffic time. You know what the cheapest move was on Ethereum on Sunday night?
$25.
$167 US.
Oh, that's disgusting.
So tell me again, now these guys are out there saying, well, we didn't say it was going to make the fees lower. We said it would make them more predictable. Like, this is the dumbest thing in the world, okay? You got these guys on Twitter with these pixelated photos that they bought for $20,000 a piece, you know, and they're just talking about this garbage all the time. Now you have basically out of nowhere, unannounced, a chain split causing problems to the network because one of the most popular software clients, okay, so not even a network, like not even like a network, like, you know, like in Bitcoin, for example, if the miners decide to switch or whatever, right? Like you can't force this kind of thing if you're an outside client. Like I'm trying to think of an example here. Like let's say Coinbase, okay, one of the most popular Bitcoin clients and wallets decides one day they want to do something and everyone else doesn't want to do it. It doesn't cause a chain split. These guys, Geth, as far as I understand it, about 75% of the clients running Ethereum are using Go Ethereum. And so these guys decide one day they got to fix a problem with their code and there's a split in the chain? You got to be kidding me, man. Like, there's no communication about this. I mean, I hate that Ethereum has a foundation and like a founders team, but Jesus Christ, you couldn't run it through the foundation and do like proper communication for this, plan it in advance, do a responsible disclosure, whatever. Like, I don't know how this happened. One of the only good things about having a centralized body like the Ethereum Foundation is that you can do proper communication to your clients and to your users, right? Your investors, basically. If you ask Gary Gensler, he'd probably call them investors, but I digress. So the problem is that these guys can just push a fix and have this problem. That's insane to me. Now, in the article you used, which I think was from, from CoinDesk or something?
CoinDesk, yes.
CoinDesk. So I pulled a couple of pretty solid quotes from here. This is what it looks like to be part of a centralized network, okay? In an interview with CoinDesk, Go Ethereum developer Marius van der Weyden, who noted he was speaking in a personal capacity and not as a representative or not as representative of the Ethereum Foundation or Go Ethereum, said that after the disclosure, an exploit was inevitable. Let's break this down, okay? Go Ethereum developer says he's speaking in a personal capacity, not as representative of the ETH Foundation or from Go Ethereum. So this guy's in the foundation, okay? He's in Go Ethereum as a developer, and he's still speaking to you as a personal sort of investor, right? So let me ask you something. Who decided if you're this guy and you're looking at this from the outside, when they decide to push a fix for the exploit, who's deciding it? Is it this guy as a developer? Is it this guy as a Go Ethereum developer? Is it this guy as an Ethereum Foundation member? Or is it this guy as a, you know, a pleb, right? A guy who just knows there's an exploit and decides he has to help fix it. Don't know. But the point is that you can't answer that question either. And so if you can't answer that question, how do you know who's running the network? Is it the validators, the nodes, or is it Go Ethereum, or is it Ethereum Foundation? Who's deciding this? If you don't know, then you got a problem, because you don't know where the decision-making is going on, right? That's one issue. And I don't know how these guys can stare down the barrel of the SEC shotgun and claim that they're centralized. There's another quote. Ethereum community leaders such as Andre Crony have since called on users to stay away from doing transactions for a while, like you mentioned, and go for a walk outside. We all need it. Buddy, the network we just did, you know, I don't know how long ago this was when El Salvador started their adoption cycle. We've talked about the Lightning Network in the third world. We've talked about the dollars that are inflating away from people and other currencies that are inflating away from people and the importance of having Bitcoin. Bitcoin has never and is never, okay, I'm going to say that with confidence, is never going to have a problem where some guy who's a community leader, who the fuck is a community leader? Like, are we community leaders? What is that? Is he a local priest? Like, well, who is this guy?
Brock Pierce is a community leader, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh my God. Again, with the Mighty Ducks guy. Stay away from doing transactions for a while and go for a walk outside. Idiot. There's people using stuff like this in war-torn countries. Like, I know Ethereum only sells shitty JPEGs and other garbage from Topshot, but in real-life monetary applications, in real-life wealth transfer applications, there is no go for a walk outside and stay away from transactions for a while. There is none of that. There cannot be any of that. That's not how this is supposed to work. It's not how this is supposed to work. I don't understand how these guys can claim to be decentralized, like I just said. This is, to me, like, this should be... If people didn't have sunk cost fallacy for this garbage, this would be the nail in the coffin for me if I was an investor. And I'm constantly finding myself with new people to the space asking about Ethereum. And there's like the list of stuff you could show them is just so long. And this to me is like just among the worst, man. It's among the worst. Probably the top of that list is Vitalik picking his nose and eating it, but this has got to be near the top.
You know, with NFTs gaining more and more steam, especially lately, it's just been, I'll say it's out of hand. It's just lending credibility, unfortunately, to the Ethereum network, because people believe that there's value with Ethereum because NFTs have some sort of value associated with them. There is none. There definitely is none. And these two things, just because NFTs are growing very fast and people are buying them up left and right, doesn't mean Ethereum has value. There's problems with Ethereum. Heck, there's problems with NFTs. I could go rail on them. It doesn't make sense. A rock was sold for how much recently? It's just stupidity. But you know what? There's nothing else I have to say about this. I just wanted to bring to light to our viewers and listeners that Ethereum is going through a split. It's a result of their coding is bad. It's getting bloated. It's getting out of hand. And just be careful if you have money invested in them, Joey.
I want to say more. Hold on. I have to find... there's like a rock solid tweet that I saw yesterday. This is so good. This is so good. Okay, wait. The tweet is... from a guy goes by Zhu, so Zhusu on Twitter. He's talking about a crypto whale tweet. Crypto punks and ether rocks are cute, but what about NFTs with real utility? This new collection of 100 ultra rare NFT engagement rings will likely be worth millions one day. Look how stunning they are. If I'm De Beers, I'm worried. Imagine NFT engagement rings leveraging ERC-998. NFTs containing NFTs. All the costliness signaling of diamond rings add smart contract, zero loss to intermediaries like jewelers, and young people will retain so much more wealth to start families with. This guy, Len, come on. This cannot just be a smooth brain take. This is a scam. It's a scam being propagated by this guy. This guy cannot really believe that engagement rings are going to be replaced by NFTs. Are you stupid? You're either stupid or lying, and I know which one I think it is. Like, it's to me, like I said before, and you mentioned it a little bit too, the problem isn't that people are losing money in Ethereum. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes. I don't care about your cash. If you're dumb enough to put your money in an NFT or a digital engagement ring or a picture of a 8-bit rock, I don't know what to tell you. But the problem is that this is like a normie looks at Ethereum and Bitcoin and just says Bitcoin or just says crypto. And so like you're fighting uphill against this level of stupid and this level of scam, and it's difficult. And I don't know if we're going to talk about the Coinberry OSC regulation stuff, the maximums. If we have that today, we'll talk about the lowest common denominator. But like, this is a great example, man. Don't get caught up in this because you're going to ruin it, not only for yourself, but for everybody else. Real big opportunity in Bitcoin, not just to make a little bit of money. Like, that's great. But the opportunity is that the thing is not going to inflate away from you. You know, it's like protection from what's been 100 years of poor policy around the world. And why wouldn't you want that? You don't want pixelated pictures of rocks. You don't want pixelated engagement rings. You want hard money, and only one network gives that to you. It's Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah, it's a total scam. You're not going to hand over a picture or an NFT to somebody and ask them to if you want to get them married, and they'll accept that. It's incredible. And the reason why he's doing this, he's shilling this, is if he could find one sucker out there to accept it, his job is done, and he's slightly more richer than he was the day before. So good for him. He's doing what he can to improve his wealth, unfortunately at the expense of somebody's stupidity. So just want to move on, Joey. We've talked enough about Ethereum, and that's it. We'll shelve that topic. I want to talk about Jack Dorsey, and he wants to build a decentralized Bitcoin exchange. And for people who are unaware, what is a decentralized exchange or a DEX? It's a peer-to-peer marketplace that connects cryptocurrencies buyers and sellers. And this is in contrast to centralized exchanges like the ShakePays of the world, et cetera. Decentralized platforms are non-custodial, meaning a user remains in control of their private keys when transacting on a DEX platform. And some people will probably say, like, let enjoy. And even Jack, what the heck are you talking about? There's BISC. It exists. Well, Jack admits that BISC exists. And he, in fact, he says he loves it. And there's many lessons to learn from it. So I'm curious to see how he's going to be improving on the whole user experience and making the DEX exchange more viable. So having this exchange done, he's going to be putting it under the umbrella of Square. And this guy, he's been saying for a long time that Bitcoin will be the currency of the internet. And implementing the DEX exchange, this will help more users onboard onto Bitcoin and also offboard. It's going to be easier on and off ramp to getting Bitcoin. And this is especially true when you're considering Square and the products and services which they are offering. They're just expanding at a tremendous rate. And now having this on board, this new thing that has yet to be developed, it's going to be absolutely wonderful to see. And just keep in mind, if anybody out there wants to know what is the definition of a Bitcoin bull, look at Jack Dorsey, look at that beard and that tie-dye shirt. That it just basically draws it to a T that he is a true Bitcoin bull, and he's bringing Bitcoin to the masses. This DEX exchange, I'm looking forward to see how this is going to be implemented.
There's a lot of talk, and this is not on the list, obviously, but it's related to this, at least tangentially. There's a lot of talk on Bitcoin Twitter about Dorsey and Twitter censoring a very particular, very vocal, very famous beer flu debater, we'll call him, over the last week or so for posting some data and, you know, being generally abrasive with the scientific community. I want to echo your sentiment about Dorsey and Bitcoin. I do. I don't know who is steering the ship over at Twitter. I'm curious about that, because it seems to me at some point, and you know, I'll get back to the TBD project in a sec, but it seems to me at some point, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this, like Cash App, Square, Bitcoin adoption or Bitcoin, lines of payment and rails and Twitter are at some point going to have to merge. Am I dreaming that?
Why? Well,
It's because it's a natural, like, synonymous sort of payment network, right? Like, you just send it to my Twitter account or like my tip jar on Lightning or whatever, right? Like, it just seems like all that stuff makes sense. I don't know. Am I maybe missing something there? It seems to me like at some point the singularity is going to be on that social platform, or it's decentralized or censorship free, you know, sibling under Dorsey's banner. But it's going to be something like that, right? What do you think?
Potentially. And a lot of the things, hopefully if it's built modularly, like as a module, you could easily, you could implement it into one of these platforms. And so you could put it onto Twitter or whatever. I don't know how it's going to be, like, you're going to just amalgamate everything. That would be a huge feat to do, but you know what? That remains to be seen. This guy, he's moving mountains right now. And if anybody could do it, it's going to be Jack.
The beef that I have is that if he, you know, if he's on one hand carrying out this sort of campaign of, you know, God, it's the streaming on YouTube thing. It's going to be biting my tongue. He's carrying out this campaign of censorship against certain individuals with certain points of view while leaving, you know, terrorist groups with a platform, for example. I'm wondering if this is going to at some point affect his Bitcoin mission. And I'm not worried yet because I think that there's, you know, I think he's got a conference room full of people with just no real life experience, and he's too busy with this other stuff right now to be at the helm of Twitter. So that's fine. But I worry about that just a little bit. The other thing I worry about as a Square investor is how much is this going to chew up the crypto, I guess Bitcoin only on Square or Cash App? How much is this going to chew up the Cash App fee, like, cop? Should I be worried about that as an investor, you think? Because I'm a little worried about it.
That's an interesting point. I don't know. It probably will take a bite out of it. But even if they're going to be adopting Lightning somewhere, that's also going to take a huge bite out of that as well, because Lightning, the transfer fees are near nil. So it really is, it's not just about making money. It seems at this point, it's also just trying to get it out there. And he's basically the first, well, not the first one. He's one of the first ones trying to get it built into his company and have it just, you know, all Bitcoin. It's almost like the Michael Saylor approach, but rather than just buying Bitcoin, he's actually just trying to implement Bitcoin to be used on his platform. It's a slightly different approach, but I don't know.
I gotta say, this whole, the thing about the whatever beer flu guy and the censorship and then the, you know, I don't know. I think that there's a like a point of like a singularity coming here with all the stuff that this guy is running. And I think he must view it the same way, because otherwise why bother with all these different companies, right? That seemingly, you know, 5 years ago, he never would have figured that Cash App and Twitter would be, you know, kind of closing in on each other in terms of, like, you know, user base, for example. But he presumably here we are. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting stuff. I'm going to be watching Jack a lot, man. I want this guy to prove doubters wrong, because I think Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin Twitter has been split into two camps on him in the last month or so. One camp of people like us who, you know, I don't hate every government entity. I don't hate the idea of, you know, having to do KYC. I don't hate, like, all these things. And so I also think Dorsey's a pretty good actor. But then there's these other people who think it should just be the Wild West 100% of the time. And, you know, that group doesn't like Jack for reasons we've kind of talked about here and we've talked about before. And, you know, that's a strong group. That group has developers. It's got, you know, the people who are building privacy tools, building coin joins and building stuff like that, building Lightning Network, for example, right? Like, we know how Mallers feels. I think he's in the second camp. I know he's in the second camp. His comments on Jack are public and, you know, scathing. He's definitely shown some teeth in some of those interviews. So I think there's important people in both camps. I just want to know if Jack thinks that. And I guess I'm going to find that out in the next year, depending on what he does.
I think the infrastructure bill is going to help define who he is, and the fact that it's being pushed along. We'll be talking about the infrastructure bill later today, but it rubs Jack Dorsey the wrong way. And as that goes through the motions to be essentially passed through the House, I think that Jack's going to have to make a decision on what to do with Twitter and maybe have it more on the Wild West side of things. We'll see what happens, though. It's time will tell exactly how this is going to play out. And yeah, so that's it I have for the A-Base stories. And I want to transition to the Canadian news. The first story I have is about Big Digital Assets, and they reported their financial results for the second quarter 2021. And this came out on August 24th. And some of the Q2 2021 highlights: their gross revenue was $4.55 million, and $4.16 million was from net coins, and $385,000 came from the Blockchain Intelligent Group. Netcoin's revenue for Q2 represents around a 24% increase quarter over quarter growth and over 2,000% increase year over year. Their active users reached 19,000 in quarter two. That's a growth of 40% quarter over quarter and a growth of 1,800% year over year. Their registered users have exceeded 80,000 users in total. Their cash and cryptocurrency in treasury equals $65 million. And they currently own 430 Bitcoin. And that's a valued at about $27 million. So not all rosy, but there's growth going on in the big digital camp. So I'm curious to see if they're going to be able to maintain this growth going forward and hopefully accelerate the growth.
I'm going to let you ride this one because I do not follow the day-to-day, well, not that you follow day-to-day, but I don't follow the sort of investor relations releases for BIC. I was an investor. I still think the company's got a chance to really do well over the next 5-10 years. But, you know, as someone in our hype chat mentioned today, a lot of stuff ripping today on the FanMag Q spy side and BIC just kind of, you know, feet in the mud. So I don't know. What do you think?
It's not, they're not the only ones. Bitfarms also had kind of a meh day today. Hut 8 was the one that seems like the big winner. I don't know. It's hard for me to make what's happening in the market. There could be a lot of dumping going on with the investors, sorry, with the founders of BIC. I don't know. We'll be able to determine this later on once this is filed at the next quarter, maybe the end of the year. I don't know. But they seem to be kind of, you know, not going, they're not moving at the same pace as other Bitcoin-related companies, which is kind of concerning to me. I don't know why. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So next story I have is about Luxfolio. We talk about them quite a bit, and they signed on to the Crypto Climate Accord. And this is reflecting their commitment to green cryptocurrency mining and exchange. And this accord is not mandatory. It's just basically you just want to sign in if you want. And they have set a target of 100% renewable driven crypto activity for its members by 2025. That's only 4 years away. So Luxfolio seems to have a green commitment, and they're going to be going ahead with 100% renewable driven for their mining and so forth. So good news if you're an investor in that type of if you're a green investor.
I feel like every time we talk about this, you always close it with like, if you're looking to invest with a green mining company, like, and I'm just not like, I don't care at all. I want those companies to make as much money as they can. And I want them to do it by mining Bitcoin in the way that they think is, can be the most consistent. You know, the way that you beat expectations is that you get consistent returns when your competitors do not. And if you want to see what that looks like, ask people in Texas who were on these sort of like half-baked grids a couple of months ago. Ask people who are on wind and solar. You got to be using the stuff that works. And I, you know, like you said, it's an accord. You don't have to adhere to it or whatever. There's not going to be a penalty in your C-suite. But I'm like going to caution people against investing in companies that do this. I would love to have someone from Luxfolio on to tell me I'm wrong and tell me why. But it seems to me like the companies who are crushing, we had Sheldon on. We had Sue from Hut 8. The companies that are crushing are not going full renewable. They're doing some chunk renewable. They're kind of trying to influence what the definition of renewable is. So flare gas, for example. But I don't think you're going to see these companies that are like, oh, we're going to like what? Is blow into a wind turbine when it's not windy or, you know, get a well, lamp out. I don't know. DMG. DMG is a good example, but they're not full renewable.
They're very close because what they're using is they're tapped into the BC grid, and that is almost 100% renewable. It's that's just the way it goes in a BC market. So
do you really think BC is almost 100% renewable? Like, what is the definition of renewable there?
Hydroelectric, wind, solar, et cetera, et cetera.
Hydroelectric is like, I view hydroelectric as reliable. That's fine. It's people who tell me wind and solar are part of that renewable mix and should be a greater chunk of the overall renewable grid sourcing. Like, I just don't buy it. There's no evidence that this works anywhere in the world. And so I don't think that this is a thing that people should be, not that they shouldn't be investing in it because, you know, it's an up and coming industry potentially. But as far as I can tell, there's no real rubber on the road instances of this being like a home run for any company in power production or in Bitcoin mining.
You know where it makes sense, Joey? The narrative of Bitcoin. Now, a few months ago, the narrative was Bitcoin is dirty because coal was used to mine the majority of the Bitcoin. And that narrative has changed dramatically as the miners in China, they were shut down and pushed out of the country. So by having more and more of these companies get on board with the crypto climate accord, and I'm not advocating it, I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not really that big on it, but just having more and more miners get on board with that, the narrative cannot remain that Bitcoin is dirty, because it's impossible to be dirty and using green energy at the same time. Now, if the people could then change the argument that Bitcoin is using a lot of energy, fine, I could take that. But dirty energy, no, it's just not possible, because companies are doing what they can to try to reverse that narrative.
Okay. All right. I don't want to keep us here any longer, but I still have thoughts on that.
I just want to transition. You know what? This story was actually later in my notes here, but I'll bring it up for our friend Dion in the chat. And there are municipal elections going on in Edmonton, and there are some municipal candidates that are promising to make Edmonton a cryptocurrency-friendly city. And they go as far as to declare the city as a municipality that embraces Bitcoin. That is good. So you have now some candidates out there, municipal candidates out there, that recognize that Bitcoin should be an alternative or something that should be accepted. And for example, we have Innisfil, Ontario. And I learned today, I had no idea this was the case. For those who are unaware, Innisfil is just north of Toronto, south of Barrie. So if ever you go up to Wasaga Beach, you come across Innisfil. But nonetheless, Innisfil became the first municipality in Canada to accept cryptocurrency as a form of payment for property taxes. And that was back in March 2019. And Coinberry was helping them with that endeavor. So we already have one municipality that is accepting Bitcoin for property taxes. And it looks like there's a few people running for office in Edmonton that also wants to have the same thing go on over there. Why not accept payment in Bitcoin instead of cash, instead of fiat currency, where it's going to be just devalued? If you could somehow accept it in Bitcoin, and if there's any way they could hold on to it and it appreciates in value, everybody's a winner that's a taxpayer in that municipality. So here we go. We have Edmonton. They have candidates out there knocking on doors saying that they want to make it a city that embraces Bitcoin. That's fantastic news.
I asked our conservative candidate here back in, I guess, 2018, maybe, what he thought about Bitcoin. And he knew what it was. It was Peter Dykowski, I think his name was, former Tiger Cat or former Argonaut. You know that guy?
No, can't help you with that.
No, he's like a younger guy. He's probably not much older than me. But he at least knew what it was. I think, you know, we've talked about like the shifting demographic in both politics and business more broadly, but specifically in politics. It's not just in politicians that are coming through now, but it's in like the active voting block. So I think about my dad, for example, right? He's in his 60s. He's what the country would view, like, you know, McLean's magazine would tag him with the active voter, the active voter designation. And he's got Bitcoin. So like, does he want to vote for someone that is going to whatever tax it away or ban it or make it difficult to use? Like, I don't know if that's something he would care about that much on the ballot, but for sure it would at least cross his mind if it came up during a debate. Because he knows like that I have it, and so like my family's got it, and my friends have it. Like everyone I know has some Bitcoin, right? And so the more that this stuff makes it into the zeitgeist as the demo shifts from, you know, the boomers to zoomers. Am I a zoomer? I'm a millennial. What's a zoomer? A little younger than me? I think that's like 25. Someone in the chat can help me out with that. I don't know what a zoomer is, but like as it shifts from boomers to zoomers, which is the tagline we're going to use because it rhymes. I think that this stuff is going to become more frequent. And I view these candidates, like in Edmonton, for example, you know, whether or not it's not about whether or not it's an issue now, right? It's about whether or not in 5 years you remember the candidate that came to you and talked to you about Bitcoin or had that in their platform. Like that person was forward thinking, ahead of the curve, right? And that's important in politics to be ahead of the curve, because, you know, we're in an election cycle now. Without getting into, political debate here, It's a lot of, you know, flowery language, like it always is. And so something like that sets a candidate apart or sets a party apart is important. And for people our age who are, I'm saying our age, me and you are about a decade apart, but for people my age and a little younger who are not particularly politically motivated, maybe even apathetic to the political process these days, having something like that will grab you will grab you a little bit more attention from a demo that you could potentially want, you know, in your back pocket. Those are the ones who are going to be earning and spending, starting families, buying real estate, stuff like that. It's important if you're a politician and a policymaker in the next 10 years or so. So I like the move, man. Even if it's not a story now, I like the move.
You're right. And you know what? This is something that should be discussed. It is very important. The problem is there's other issues that they're being brought to the forefront, and it's made to be important. And those are the ones that they're talking about, and they're the ones that they're trying to push in front of us. And that's the real issue here. Just what should be discussed, what should be accepted. It's just, it's not. And it's a sad reality, but here we are. Moving on, I got a story about Aquarius AI, and they're traded under the ticker AQUA, Aqua. And they've acquired rights to purchase 500 next generation Bitcoin mining rigs for a total of $5 million. And they're going to be purchasing some S19 Pro units. And if you want to know who the heck Aquarius AI Inc. is, well, they're a digital advertising technology company, and they are now exploring the possibility of doing mining, Bitcoin mining. So there you go. If you wanted to have a little bit of exposure to a very small Bitcoin mining company, here you go. Here's your opportunity to do so. I'm finding a lot of companies like this that are coming out of the woodwork. So here's another one.
What are they trading at?
Didn't even check, but it's AQUA. I don't think it's very much. It seems like it's on the CSE. So I don't think it's very high, but what the heck do I know? But I'm just reporting.
Welcome to the home of small Canadian mining equity plays.
Yeah, so there you go. We got another one. And you know what? Even more, I have a story about Fortress Technologies, and they announced their second quarter 2021 financial results. And they're traded under Venture under the ticker FORT, Fort. And the company has commissioned 12 containers in a strategic venture with GAM, and these can operate 2,160 new generation ASIC miners, or about 180 ASIC miners per container. Currently, four of these containers are actively hashing in the field, producing approximately 52 petahash, and they're converting flared natural gas into electricity, thereby reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And the remaining eight containers have been constructed, and they have been shipped from China, and these will be deployed in their gas fields by the end of September 2021. And they're going to have a total hash rate of 158 petahash. And so there you go. We have another one that's on board Fort, and actually their portfolio, they're expected to produce 27.6 Bitcoin per month based on the current difficulty, which is not bad for a small mining company.
Is you have any idea if GAM is Great American Mining?
I believe it is.
That's cool. Okay, yeah, I know a little bit about them. Marty Bent is works for them. Guy who does the TFDC podcast and some other good stuff in the space. That's interesting. Good. That's a good partnership. Big partnership. That's good to see.
Yeah, if you want to know about Canadian Bitcoin news, this is the place to get it. And next one I have is about Neptune Digital Assets, and we talked about them in the past. They hold a crapload of shitcoins on their balance, but nonetheless, they announced the arrival of next generation Bitcoin miners. They recently purchased of 200 new Antminer S19 Pros. And these machines the purchase of this was announced on July 7th, and they have arrived in the United States and are securely warehoused, awaiting to be distributed to the company's Bitcoin mining facility. And this will add another 22,000 terahash of capacity to their existing 12,000 terahash. And the company has a total assets of $54 million and monthly revenues of $505,000 per month. And the company has zero debt and no material liabilities at this time. Pretty cool.
That's a strong balance sheet. Very strong balance sheet.
Yeah. So hopefully that makes some more people happy, because I know some people were talking about Neptune in chats before. So here you go. Neptune is here. Enjoy some news. And moving on, we'll talk about Hive, and they've announced that it expects to file their financial statements for the financial year ending March 31st, 2021. And they are going to be announcing this on September 16th, 2021. We talked about it in the past that they have delayed their annual financial statements and the market didn't take kindly to that, but they are going to be announcing their financial statements September 16th or earlier. And also some good news from the Hive camp. Well, they achieved their one exahash in Bitcoin mining this past week. So they are now in the one exahash category along with a few other companies, but it's a very select few companies.
There was a interesting tweet today that I saw from Peter Schiff. So this is sort of related to Hive. Macroscope on Twitter says U.S. Global Investors, the investment manager well known for specializing in gold and precious metals today, disclosed it started buying Bitcoin exposure. It added Grayscale Bitcoin in three funds, Gold and Precious Metals Fund, Global Resources Fund, and World Precious Fund. Now, here's the thing that's interesting about U.S. Global Investors. That fund is headed up by CEO Frank Holmes. Do you know who Frank Holmes is?
He used to be the Hive CEO or something. He was kind of not pushed out. He was replaced because he was there temporarily.
He's the former Hive CEO. So interesting stuff from Hive. I think this is not really, you can't really say this yet, but I think you're going to start to see companies that, employ big time C-suite hires, guys like Frank Holmes, branch off into what you and I would call and have called the traditional financial realm, whether it's hedge or other fund management or other opportunities to run outside money. And you're going to start to see them deploy capital here because they know what the space is about and how to value it. And I think stuff like this is bigger than people realize. I can't believe this went under the radar today because this is something that to me is a big deal for a company like GBTC, for example, who's buying, who's getting the exposure or is being used as exposure to Bitcoin. So I like this a lot, man. Stuff like that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And next up, Joey, is a story you probably want to cover your ears because we'll be talking about a Bitcoin ETF, and they aim to offset its climate impact by planting trees to become the first carbon negative investment fund. And it's called Accelerate Financial Technologies. They're going to be planting approximately 3,450 trees for every almost $800,000 US or 1 million Canadian invested in the fund, its founder said. And this will be launching tomorrow, August 31st, under the ticker ABTC on the TSX.
How many trees do they have to plant per ASIC deployed to be carbon negative?
I didn't do the analysis on that.
that's because there is no analysis to do. It's totally ridiculous. This is insane that people are even mentioning this kind of stuff. This kind of stuff drives me bonkers. You know that I'm not breaking any news there, but I just, man, come on. I don't get it.
I gave you fair warning to cover your ears. You didn't. So you have nobody else to blame except for yourself. Moving on, Joey, let's talk about the Ontario Securities Regulator. That they barred the country's first registered crypto platforms from trading Tether. So they stopped Coinberry and Wealthsimple to trade Tether. I don't want to go too far into this. Tether seems to be there on the news a little bit more lately. There's some FUD surrounding it. But just want to inform everybody, if you want to buy Tether, you won't have the ability to do so on the Coinberry or Wealthsimple platform.
This is not the big story, though, about the OSC. Did you see the story about the three designations for investors in cryptocurrencies that Coinberry also had a part in?
No.
Okay.
Hit me up.
I'm going to look this up right now, but I'm going to also continue to discuss the story. So the gist of it is that the OSC now is, like we mentioned before, creeping regulation. They are going to assign three designations to crypto investors. And the three designations are, I don't remember exactly what the terminology is, the nomenclature, but the designations are basically top tier, accredited, right? That's the top tier. And then two below that. Unless you're an accredited investor, you cannot earn more than $30,000 per year trading different cryptocurrencies. Also, if you're not accredited, you can only trade Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash, I believe. In the province, well, I guess it'd be countrywide. OSC is just the name for the Canadian Securities Regulator. So, interesting stuff here. I wish I had this story handy. I thought for sure you were going to talk about this, and so I didn't pull it up. But this is the kind of stuff that when we talk about, it's important that Ethereum disappears. It's important that Doge disappears. That Cardano disappears. That all these shitcoin YouTube channels disappear. This is why, because now you're going to get your knees cut out from under you if you're a good Bitcoin trader or whatever. Obviously, we don't encourage that kind of behavior on this channel. But if you're a Bitcoin trader now, you can't play.
30K?
In the alts. 30K. That's my memory. That's my memory. I might be a little off on the number, but I think it's 30K. And so that to me is the big story here. And I can't believe that Coinberry is, I don't know what, going along with it. I think they're going to try and contribute some more language to the regulation at some point. But this is insane, man, that this is allowed to happen. And, you know, don't forget, like we've said before, you can go to McDonald's and order cookies and bonbons till the cows come home. No one's going to cap you there. You can go to the tables at the casino and order bonbons till the cows come home and gamble and do whatever other vice you got till you're out of money and no one will stop you. You can go to, I don't know, like a convenience store and buy, you know, 100 King packs of Marlboros or whatever you like to smoke, and no one's going to stop you. You can, you know, some places in Canada now, like, do hard drugs and stuff, man, like, and no one's going to stop you. But somehow the regulation for your protection has to come down around Bitcoin. Like, it doesn't make sense unless you start to look at this through the lens of, we can't have people making money off this stuff because we don't want to legitimize it at all, blah, blah, blah. Like, to me, much like other topics we've discussed here, I won't drop the subject at this moment, but you can guess what it is. The push is not about public safety. It's about public, it's like a nudge, right? It's like a public behavior nudge. There's a name for that. I can't remember what it is. It might actually just be nudging, but it's a way to discourage people from dabbling in these things and realizing, much like you and I have, Len, that, you know, the emperor is wearing no clothes in a lot of these different situations. So interesting stuff. Maybe next week we can talk about it once there's a little more clarity. I think something came out like today or yesterday, but super weird, man. Super weird. Definitely something worth keeping an eye on.
So stay tuned. This is going to be a discussion that we'll be discussing in great length next week.
Or if you have it, like if you're in the chat right now and you have the details, like either DM them to me on Twitter or something, and we'll talk about it in the after show here, because I do want to talk about it a bit. Well, even if we don't go deep, we can at least, you know, skim the surface a bit.
Well, you know what? Even if we do a Nooner this week, that could be something we could talk about. But, you know, it won't be pushed aside. We'll be talking about it in the very near future. And I want to just talk about something else, which is called a company called CryptoStar. And they're traded on the venture exchange under ticker CSTR. They're a very small cryptocurrency mining company. And they are, and a unnamed Hong Kong-based firm have closed a purchase of a sale of GPUs and ASIC miners, which, according to the press release, are capable of a minimum hash rate of 25,950 mega hash per second. That's for the GPU side of things. And 5,510 terahash per second. That's the ASIC side of things. So here we go. Another small company that's growing. They're buying more equipment to make the to increase their hash rate. This company doesn't have a lot of news coming out in the past. I've been following them for quite a while, and there's been almost nothing. So here we go. If you're an investor in CryptoStar, this is news that you should be very happy to hear.
How are we going to follow up on unnamed Hong Kong firms? What is the plan to follow up on that?
It's impossible.
What are we Googling to find out more? Yeah.
Well, did he go through Jack Ma and figure out I don't know. But you know what? Whatever it is, they bought more GPUs and ASIC miners. Obviously, you know, I don't want to say. Anyway, sorry. I was going to say something that would have been really off color. I'll just leave it at that. being alive sometimes sucks. And the last story I have about Canada, or from Canada, is Canada's newest golf club manufacturer, Greenwood Putters. They're offering the use of Bitcoin for purchases, and they sell performance putters with Bitcoin. So if you want to improve your short game and you got some extra Bitcoin sitting around, you could actually trade some of that Bitcoin for a performance putter and hopefully decrease your handicap.
My short game is the worst part of my golf game. I don't know about you, but it seems like no matter how well I hit it off the tee, and like I said, I hit it so well the other weekend, I couldn't believe it. But as soon as there's like no grass under the ball, I can't get underneath it. It's like a visual cue I need hitting out of like the rough to get lower and make contact with the ball to get some loft. But when I'm on the fairway there, it's just nothing but worm burners, buddy. They're on the lookout for me, those guys.
Here's a trick, Joey. If you're very close to the green and you have like a very good lie, so you don't have, you know, you're not on the rough or whatever, whip out a hybrid. You could use a hybrid almost like a putter in that situation and just kind of punch it onto the green and get it close to the hole. It works for me. It works for a few of my friends too. So there's a golfing tip for you. And that's it for the Canadian side of stories. I'll talk about the rest of the news.
Is that a good tip? I can't let you go there. There's no way people are using hybrids as putters from like 80 feet out. Come on.
Not 80 feet out. If you're in a situation where you're going to be chipping the ball on, you know, rather than if you're not comfortable using a 60 degree or 56 degree where you really got to get under the ball or else you'll skull it and we'll go flying, just whip out a hybrid. I use it almost all the time when I'm close to the green. It's fantastic. It makes so much sense. If I'm, you know, a few yards away, and it doesn't have to travel very far, I'm hybriding all the way.
All right.
Yeah, it's definitely I'm not BSing you. It's the absolute truth. So next step I want to talk about is Riot Blockchain. We talked about them many times in the past because they're one of the bigger companies out there that's mining Bitcoin. And they reported their second quarter 2021 financial results. They increased the revenue by 1,546% to a record 31.5 million dollars. They produced a record income of $19.3 million, and that was for the 3-month period ending June 30th. So they're moving up. If you look at how much they're earning, it's basically record after record. It's a company that's growing quite a bit. So Riot is one of the bigger ones out there. Riot, Bitfarms, Marathon, to a lesser degree, Argo, et cetera, but Riot is one of the big ones, and they're mining at a huge rate. It's just growing and growing. And that's from ending June 30th. Now that the price of Bitcoin's gone up even higher, what they're going to be mining is going to be fantastic. I can't wait to see what's going to happen when they report something in June. In September.
Are these guys, Riot or otherwise, are they accumulating at a greater rate than they were during the last sort of accumulation phase for them? Or are they still sort of, you don't know yet? I guess you don't see until the reporting comes out, right?
I can't say. And from what I understand, the narrative has always been that these miners have been hodling what they've been mining for the most part. Some have been selling a little bit to maintain, you know, whatever expenditures that they have. But for the most part, these mining companies, they're hodling what they're mining. And that is a very good piece of news for if you're bullish on Bitcoin, when you have somebody out there, the companies that are mining it, they're holding it. That shows something. That shows that there's a long term. The price is going to go up and up and up.
Yeah, I agree. They're a good leading, maybe not leading, but a good like forward looking indicator of Bitcoin price. I think one of the better ones.
Agreed, and that's why when people are talking, is the price of Bitcoin going to be going up? I always look at the miners, and they're going to be kind of leading the way. What are they doing? If they're selling, then maybe shoot, it's time to sell. But no. They've been hodling, and I can't give you specifics for Riot, but there it is. And I want to talk about the Bitcoin mining difficulty. It increased by a little bit more than 13% on August 25th. This is as a result of hash rate coming back online due to the mining exodus from China. And it's been going on for a little while. If you look at year week after week, the mining difficulty has been increasing. 13% was one of the higher ones we've seen for the past little while. This is good news. And this is totally reflective of more hash rate going online because mining companies are buying more equipment. This is great news.
We talked about this, the hash rate jumping back up last week under a certain story. I forget which story, or maybe it was the Nooner. I don't remember. But this is like, to me, and actually I was listening to Phil Coin Icarus' show a little earlier today, and they were saying the same thing. Like, what you saw with the Chinese displacement is like an unbelievable shot at the network, and for it to basically weather it more or less, you know, without even a flinch, I guess price dipped a bit, but it's basically back to where it was at about 50K. If you shave off that top end blow off, it made it to 60 or 64. And now the miners are coming back online. Like, I don't know of another industry where you can have like China ban the product, ban the manufacturing of the product, or whatever, pick your country, ban the manufacturing of the product, and then have people take loans and raise capital and do whatever to deploy more of that manufacturing mechanism to get more of the product, even as this is going on, even as legislation is coming down, even as Gensler and company are starting to show the scythe, right? And they're coming with the black robes, like Dementors in Harry Potter. All this stuff going on, and you're telling me that Bitcoin is on the way out, Peter Schiff, that it's on the way out, Francis Coppola, that it's on the way out, Taleb, like, I don't know, man. To me, this is a skin in the game kind of deal, which he should know more about than almost anybody. And yet here we are, you know, this is it's a positive sign. Like you said, it's good stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to talk about now Morgan Stanley. And in an SEC filing, they have reported ownership of a large amount of Grayscale Bitcoin across multiple portfolios. The largest of these appear to be 926,000 shares held by Morgan's Insight Funds. These are major disclosures. And also, they own about $240 million of Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. It is the second largest holder of GBTC after Cathie Wood's ARK investment. Morgan Stanley is not dumb. They have a lot of smart people working for them. They see what's happening. They understand that Bitcoin go up. They're investing in it.
So let me hit you with something here for people who, and I'm guilty of this too. Like I don't have any ARK ETFs anymore, but if I look at the ARKW, the next generation ETF holdings, tell me how Morgan Stanley now is anything but aligned with Cathie Wood. Grayscale Trust at 6%, Twitter at 5%, Coinbase at 5%, Square at 4%. I could go down the list here and probably find a few more. Palantir, I would even say, is sort of Bitcoin friendly at 3%, and the list goes on. So for people who are invested in this new, for example, the Wood ETF, I don't know what the ticker is, but basically it's like the short ARK ETF. For people who are invested in that, now Cathie Wood, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, Cathie Wood is in this this sort of, what's the best way to put it? She's in this sort of grouping of people that are Bitcoin friendly, but can't influence the price direction as much as some others. But JP Morgan is in that group that we talked about that can manifest an outcome if they so desire. And for them to have all this exposure to Grayscale tells me two things. And one, that they think Bitcoin is going to rip. And two, I think Grayscale is going to get to ETF status. It's almost a guarantee, because if they're not going to get there, who's going to get there? They're the ones who are putting in the legwork. They're the ones who have the regulatory capture, political capture, like we've discussed. And they're the ones, I think, that are going to get first across the finish line, even if it's, you know, a rigged race. I'm pretty sure it's going to be them. And this stuff just makes me feel more sure of that.
It's probably going to be a derivative of Bitcoin, a Bitcoin ETF that purchases or has some sort of derivative of Bitcoin on it, not just a Bitcoin ETF that actually owns Bitcoin. That's what I understand what Gary Gensler is talking about, that that's probably going to be the first one that's going to win a race here in the Bitcoin ETF. So I don't know, maybe GBTC might be the one, but you know what?
Do you want to talk about that Bitcoin derivatives ETF thing, the Gensler thing? Because I heard those comments too, and I'm wondering what you think about why he wants to do that, like why a derivative ETF?
I haven't put much thought into it, so it's hard for me to come up with something that's insightful right now. So I can think about it going forward, but off the cusp, I just don't know. I wish I had something.
Yeah, me neither. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but just I want to piggyback off that. In fact, it was an $815 million Maryland-based investment firm. They actually filed a Bitcoin futures ETF, and it's called Advisor Shares. And they're not going to be holding Bitcoin directly. And as we discussed, they're kind of indirectly involved with Bitcoin, but not owning Bitcoin. So here he goes, another one that's going to be, they filed an application with the SEC to get approved, but good luck. They're probably going to have to wait a long time to get this one approved based on SEC's track record.
If you've never heard of them and I've never heard of them, then I don't think they're going to be too high on the file stack. Good luck.
$815 million. That's not too bad. Anyways, did you hear about the House Democrats? They cleared path. The path forward for the $3.5 trillion budget bill and the infrastructure plan after breaking the stalemate. So we talked about this in weeks past, where the Senate was, you know, humming and hawing about it, including some amendments to kind of clear things out. But the looks like the House, they're going to go ahead with this. And you know what, this was another big blow to Bitcoin, but the price did not. We didn't get impacted that much. So the fact that Bitcoin weathered this storm, and this is from the United States, this is, you know, the biggest country that is involved with Bitcoin. You know, this is great news. The fact that this bill is going to pass and Bitcoin remains very strong. The price just keeps going up and up and up, at least maybe not the past week, but let's zoom out. It's going up and up and up. I think this is good news. That's the way I'm kind of viewing this. So they're passing this bill. Great. That's fine. But Bitcoin is going to be resilient.
Yeah, I think the U.S. government's the biggest proof of stake system in the world. And here we are, our little $1 trillion proof of work system continues to chug along, even in the face of all this direct attack, direct policy attacks. And like you said, I mean, for that, like we talked about the Chinese mining thing effect on price, for that day, the price to only drop, I think maybe $1,000 and then get eaten up pretty
quickly. Yeah, it was fantastic. Like, really, I mean, it's a very, very low number. I mean, so yeah, that's good.
Really good.
Yeah. That's bullish, at least in my opinion, it's bullish. And I actually want to talk a little bit about, SEC and how it's going to be going after a lot of these, you know, DeFi and et cetera, but we had the CEO of Arise Coin. He pleaded guilty for duping investors out of $4 million. And he's going to be spending 5 years in prison for security fraud. And that he was, this is as of a scam because he built investors out of $4.25 million to be exact. And this is the SEC. They're basically going through the files on their desk and they came across this one. This was the first decentralized banking platform, this quote unquote. And it just turned out to be a scam. Very, very good news if you're a Bitcoiner, very bad news if you're into the DeFi market. In fact, I got a little bit more news about this. The SEC also signed a deal to investigate DeFi transactions. Blockchain analytics firm AnChain.ai signed a deal with the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission to help monitor and regulate the turbulent decentralized finance industry. These are five separate one-year deals. So they're going to be employing this company to help them monitor and regulate DeFi industry. You know what? They are, I've been said it before, and I'll say it again. It's under the radar. Like, it's on the radar for them. They have their scopes locked on DeFi, and now they have more companies helping them to actually investigate. You know what? If you're in a shitcoin project that's involved with DeFi, be careful. You may want to consider taking your money out before the hammer drops.
Is it not insane that probably 5 years ago, the same people who are now buying, JPEG rocks for $2 million were saying that art is a place where people launder fiat money? Like, what do you think the $2 million rock is, bro? You think it's like the guy wants to pay $2 million, or you think that he's got the tide and the machine on? Because I tell you what I think about that.
You know, I can't believe I just can't wrap my head around spending that much money for a freaking JPEG of a rock. And crazy. As soon as you mentioned that to me, I just go and I can't even think anymore. I just turn red and was, oh, what the heck is that all about? Heck is buying a JPEG rock for $2 million? Is that the price?
Yeah, well, some of them are $2 million. Zero Hedge had a tweet today saying this is okay, or this is not a big deal.
Waste of money.
One rock after another, million, 500,000, 2 million, 1.7 million, like crazy amount of sales.
It's a fucking insane joke. That's what I'll say. It's a fucking joke.
It's money laundering. What else could it be? There's no way it's not money laundering. Like, I hate to say it, but it's very obvious that that's what it is. And, you know, you say whatever you want about whether you think it should be allowed or whether or not you think money laundering is, you know, anything except just fiat riches or whatever. I don't know, like, pick your terminology. But at the end of the day, this was something that we were saying wasn't happening in crypto and Bitcoin. And now these guys are basically running just one big scam for money laundering. You cannot tell me that the rock is worth $2 million. It's just not. It's just not. Like, people are using this as a tool to skirt, you know, authorities of old, and it sounds like they're not gonna be able to do it for much longer. So I'm looking forward, can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm looking forward to seeing what exactly goes down with our buddies here, because I'm sure it's not gonna be pretty.
I totally agree. And did you know that there was an alleged Dogecoin mining scam that raked in $119 million? And this scammer pulled in with huge promises to would-be investors for massive returns. This scammer actually impacted 1,500 investors. Claims of 100% returns on their investment. So here we go, Dogecoin scams, you know, people associated with it. It all makes sense, man. Don't get involved with these shitcoins. Don't get involved with these massive returns. When somebody comes and peddle you, you'll make 100% returns right away. It's not the case. It just doesn't make sense. Buy Bitcoin, hold on to it. It's going to go up over time. You're not going to make money quickly on this. It's a long-term investment. Be patient.
This is the same. This is akin to people who like run YouTube channels or run Instagram accounts where like they're selling you their investing secrets for like $10.99 a month. Like, listen, man, no one who's able to make real money in cryptocurrency is going to sell you their edge for anything less than a king's ransom. So whether it's someone who tells you Doge is going to hit the moon and it gives you a tip, or whether it's someone that's running a DeFi platform scheme, there is no person in the world, no rational actor that's going to sell you their edge. You know, Len and I give out what we say is not financial advice on this show. It is not financial advice, but we give out information because like we've talked about many times, we're sick of people being taken advantage of. This lowest common denominator thing that's become a frequent topic on our show. It's not about us giving you an edge. It's about us trying to protect an industry and a Bitcoin sort of Bitcoin environment that we think could be valuable to people, not just for the wealth, but for what it represents as far as, you know, removing this inflation problem, for example, or removing the issue with market mechanics being perverted. It's not about an edge for us, but a lot of people are in the business of pretending to sell an edge, and got to be careful about stuff like that if you're following these people. That's for sure.
Bang on. And the last story I have, I want to talk about Cuba, and they're going to be recognizing and regulating cryptocurrencies for payment. And just a heads up, in Cuba, it's banned to use Visa and MasterCard. Western Union actually suspended all dollar transfers to Cuba, and U.S. sanctions make it difficult to use the U.S. dollar actually in Cuba right now. So there's a lot of gaps that's already in existence, but Bitcoin, they fill in those gaps. And I'm hopeful that they could adopt it somehow. It makes sense. There's a lot of things there's a lot of transition going on in Cuba right now. People are protesting against the government, and that would be, you know, a few years ago unheard of, but it seems like people are getting fed up over there. Fantastic country. People are very nice. I hope only the best for them, and hopefully they adopt Bitcoin.
What is there? Someone was tweeting this, might have been Preston Pish, maybe, about how Cuba is a difficult country as far as adoption because of the CUC mechanism. So the CUC is a basically tourist currency that they peg to the dollar, at some level. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the CUC is what you use if you're a tourist, and then they can only trade the CUC for pesos, I think, and we can only get the CUC by giving dollars up as a tourist. I think, right? And that's what keeps their currency, quote unquote, stable.
Let me just go on. I just wanted to cut you off. Go. It's actually, so if you're a resident of Cuba, you could buy the CUCs. I believe the number was 18 or 19 to one, but you can only, you sell it at a worse rate. So every time you do a transaction of buying and selling, you're losing out. So as a resident, so buying and selling the CUCs, you're losing out on the whole transaction. So this was made up. Just temporary measures to keep everything afloat, and it worked temporarily, but eventually you have to pay the piper. And here we are, things are becoming really bad in Cuba in terms of how they're able to sustain themselves. All these sanctions and everything, it's tough for them.
Yeah. Nothing so temporary as a temporary or nothing so permanent as a temporary government program, as they say. Good for us for knowing the CUC mechanism. I can't believe both of us knew how that worked without any real background. Pat on the back. Good job.
Yeah, actually, this is courtesy of Guy Swan is a great Bitcoin podcast. I would recommend everybody to listen to it, Bitcoin Audible. And that's where I learned it from. Very recent episode. Good stuff. And that's it I have for the news stories. And I have, I just want to know, do you have a Bitcoiner of the week?
I do. This is going to be a little off the beaten path, but I want to do it anyway. And I'm going to just go to my Twitter thing here. We talk a lot on this show about the Apple treasury. And all the cash those guys have sitting around, Tim and friends, sitting on what's, I think, closing in on $1 trillion, maybe, could be even more than that now. But we often talk about how they're spending the money. And I don't know how they're spending it, and no one really knows how they're spending it, if they're spending it. But I want to point you to something here that Denver Bitcoin tweeted yesterday. So Denver Bitcoin on Twitter. An insane amount of Bitcoin has moved over the last 72 hours. Value transacted per day is making new all-time highs the last 3 days. But the last 5 hours, over $17 billion has moved, with $500 million to $1 billion in each transaction. So I don't know who this is or if this is related to Apple, but the speculation around the moves is that it's done by a company called Braeburn Capital. So Braeburn Capital, if you type in Braeburn Capital on Google and you end up looking through the results until you find the Braeburn Capital page, what you'll find is that if you go to the Wikipedia article for Braeburn Capital, it is an asset management company based in Reno, Nevada, and a subsidiary of Apple Incorporated. If you go to the company website, it redirects to apple.com. And there's some speculation that these guys have been interested in Bitcoin for some time and may now finally be deploying capital to Bitcoin. I don't know how legit the speculation is, but for my Bitcoiner of the week, I want it to be Braeburn as a proxy for these other management companies that are managing huge treasuries without tying their name to it. So keep an eye on this kind of thing. And Denver Bitcoin is a good account to follow. There's some other ones like Whale Blocks or something like that that talk about the giant transactions coming through in US dollar terms. But I can't remember a time where 17 billion moved in 5 hours at no less than 500 million a transaction. That's a ton of money. And that's, I mean, it could be more than one user, but it seems to me that probably it's not. I don't know. Seems like an awful coincidence for suddenly a bunch of people with a billion plus in assets to be buying that much money at one time. And to me, Len, I don't know. It seems very suspect, but I'm going to keep an eye on Braeburn Capital. So shout out to Build and HODL on Twitter and to Denver Bitcoin on Twitter for pointing that out to me. Very interesting stuff. By the way, if it was one company, they would own more than MSTR.
Wow.
So that's one, basically 5 hours more than MSTR is accumulated in a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out. As a lot of these companies, they have to report what they earn. It was what they own. And so,
but the next 12 months, Braeburn does not, I don't think Braeburn has to report. This is the loophole I think that they would be using. I don't know enough about, like, I mean, we talked about Gap on some of the interview shows and just here and there, but I don't know what is required of Gap if Braeburn is a subsidiary of Apple. Like, subsidiary is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence. And when you're talking about, you know, a trillion in assets under management, I don't know. So it says Apple's cash and long-term investments managed by Braeburn in 2018, it was $240 billion. So what's it now? I don't know. Probably 500 maybe. Either way, it's a number that allows for transactions of that size and that density. So let's see. Fingers crossed. I got a lot of Apple stock. So
$500 billion today, but tomorrow, who knows what it's going to be worth considering that it's being inflated to the whatever. So yeah, that's a good one. And mine, I'm not going to really go off the beaten path. This past week, there was a birthday that was celebrated in the Bitcoin community. Hal Finney.
Love this pick. Love this pick.
His birthday. Sorry, not his birthday. His passing. August 28th, he passed away. He's a massive Bitcoin pioneer. And a lot of people even suspect he might be Satoshi, but who knows? We may never even find out who he is. But nonetheless, Hal Finney, without him, we probably wouldn't be where we are today, even if he's not Satoshi. So all of that, nothing I could really say about him. That's, you know, what can I say? A lot has already been said and written about him. People who don't know about him should take a look. It's a very sad story how he passed away. He was, seemed like in peak health before he got sick. And it's sad, but nonetheless, he is my Bitcoiner of the week.
I'll say one thing about Hal that you missed. There's a picture floating around on Twitter that I'm trying to find right now.
Is it with the television?
I'm unprepared. No, it's him running.
Yeah.
It's like jogging.
Those and legs are just massive.
Unbelievable power in those things. That is fucking nuts, man. That's good for him. Attaboy, Hal. Wherever you are, buddy. Frozen in the cryo chamber, I guess. Hey, that was what he opted for. Good for you. RIP.
And there's actually a picture, you may not know this, but he's playing video games with an Intellivision. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what the Intellivision is. I thought it was ColecoVision initially, but it was Intellivision. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, man, he's my kind of guy. But yeah.
Is this the one where his like wife or girlfriend is standing over him?
That's it.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, quite a shot.
Yeah, so there you go. He played Intellivision, so did I. So that's it for my Bitcoiner of the week. Do you have a no coiner of the week?
I don't have one this week. No.
All right. Well, mine is really simple. It's Rhoda Weeks Brown, and she works for the IMF. And you kind of know where I'm
just going down the org chart, Len, or what? Like every week we got another IMF staffer.
There's actually a blog that was written by her and Tobias Adrian, but the tweet that actually spearheaded this all, and I'm going to quote it: privately issued crypto assets like Bitcoin come with substantial risk. Making them equivalent to a national currency is an inadvisable shortcut And then she goes on, read the blog for more information, which I did. I clicked on the blog because I wanted to know more about what the IMF thinks about Bitcoin, because I'm very curious about what their thoughts. And the very first line in this blog, I'm going to quote this, so hear me out. New digital forms of money have potential to provide cheaper and faster payments, enhance financial inclusion, improve resilience and competition among paying providers, and facilitate cross-border transfers. 100% right. Yeah, you're basically pumping up Bitcoin. This is the very first line from your blog, of, and you're pumping up Bitcoin, saying it's the be-all and end-all. I 100% agree. And then she goes on and on. She says, or writes, crypto assets are unlikely to catch on in countries with stable inflation and exchange rates and credible institutions. You're right. But the ones that are going to be adopting it are the ones that are being screwed over, like the El Salvadors of the world, et cetera, et cetera. It makes total sense for them to adopt Bitcoin and not keep the status quo. Why continue on with the status quo when it's just going to perpetuate poverty for the rest of their existence? You know what? They're adopting Bitcoin for a reason. And you know what, Miss Weeks Brown, she, and this is why she's my Bitcoin, sorry, my no-coiner of the week. She's from Liberia, you know, and I did some searching on Liberia. It's one of the poorest countries in the world, and they have a formal employment rate of 15%. That's really, really bad. Their GDP per capita peaked in 1980, a long time ago, and it was $496 per person. That's brutal. And you know, if you go on and on, if you look at what they are, their economy is dependent on foreign aid, foreign direct investment. So basically, it's outside money pouring into that company, country, to keep them afloat. This is Liberia. She is from Liberia. Doesn't she have any friends? Doesn't she have any relatives? Any sort of inkling what it's like to live in Liberia back in her childhood days? She was a Harvard graduate, so she traveled to U.S. for schooling reasons, but she spent some time in Liberia. What has the IMF done to help out Liberia and her fellow Liberians? Absolutely nothing. Essentially, they're just approving loan after loan. And in the end, it's resulting is with poor countries with very little hope. You know, these countries might as well use cash day advances to get by with things, because the IMF is not helping them up with the SDRs and just printing the money and giving it to them. Makes no sense to me. She has no clue what's going on back home. They're suffering. And why are they suffering? Because they're stuck in this cycle of debt after debt to organizations like the IMF. And she's working for them. And I'm really, really sad that she's actually doing this. She's writing pieces out here that is going to prevent her native country, where she was born, from actually coming out of poverty and going to where they should be. Who the heck knows where it should be? But right now it's being... The thumb is helping them stay down, and they have no way of getting out. And that's why she's my no coiner of the week. And she could just screw herself for that.
Can we just mention here for a sec? Sorry, everyone, my brightness is like so high. Can we mention here for a sec what she mentioned there, where cryptocurrencies are unlikely to take root in places where stable exchange rates, controlled inflation, and where institutions still have the faith of the population? What is the list of countries that meets that criteria these days? What is it?
It's smaller and smaller, but I'm going to have to say that still it exists in Canada, US, Western Europe, et cetera. Let's be perfectly honest. The vast majority of people probably still love the greenback, love the Canadian dollars. It's when they actually read about it, then they understand, shoot, it's not as good as it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. True. That's it. So, good. That was a great pick from you on both ends there, both ends of the spectrum. Very well.
Yeah. Thanks. So that's it for my no corner of the week. And are you a financial advisor, Joey?
Still no. Had a wild weekend at the cottage. Didn't do a single shred of CFA level one. So no.
Yeah, that's same here. I didn't take any courses. So I'm still, you know, Joe Schmo living at home, actually working out of my basement. So yeah, I'm not a financial advisor. And do you have the price of Bitcoin in US dollars? Let's see if we got a show pump.
It's going to sting, buddy.
Yeah, I
price
know.
Price is... $47,125 US. Canuck bucks there?
Yeah, we almost dropped $1,000 in Canadian. We're 59,278. We started the show. It's just north of 60K.
Nice.
This sucks, Joey. This sucks. Didn't work as I thought it would be, but you know what?
Buddy, just it's keep always your next DCA show going. That's all.
Yeah, exactly that.
Housekeeping before we go. We're going to do a nooner this week. It sounds like we're going to be talking about maybe OSC regulations or something like that?
Yeah, not OCS, but OSC.
OSC regulations, maybe OCS products, but no OSC regulations. We're going to try and do a Spaces Friday, 4 o'clock-ish to 4:30 with the guys over at Green Candle Investments who do Bitcoin related stuff. I did a little thing for them last week, so look out for that. And Two Whites and a Blue will record on Friday and be out Monday, I think, if I can convince those guys to put the beers and golf clubs down for half an hour and come over. But otherwise, I think that's it for us. What else you got, Len?
Very little. Just doing my thing. I look forward to the Nooner if we're going to go ahead with it, and also the Spaces. So everybody that has an opportunity to join in for the Spaces, please do so. And anybody that has not yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, I'd ask you to do so. And also, if you can, leave a comment, hopefully a positive comment, if on the Apple Podcast side of things. All those reviews, they help us out tremendously. The last review was a 1-star from a no coiner. So let's kind of drive that guy down to the bottom. So if anybody has an Apple product, please write a solid review for us. That'd be great.
Yeah, man. Subscribe, send the likes to the videos. Len spends a lot of time chopping up the videos and making sure that they're out there for you guys in digestible pieces. So we appreciate that. And we're going to go to the after show. I'm going to cut the recording. We'll see you on Friday.
Take care, everyone.